Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pinheiro, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome the incredible outfielder for the Cleburne Railroaders, Zach Narrier, to the show. Zach, thanks for joining us this week.
Pleasure to be on. Thank you guys for having me.
Zach, I want to start with this because, you know, you came out of 2020, kind of a very difficult season for everybody. Didn't have a great season during the regular year, fantastic in the playoffs. And some really dumb person on the show thought, well, Zach Narrier will probably hit somewhere around 270 in his career. And then you've just been killing it lately. So talk to us a little bit about how you've done so well here in Cleburne and just really become such a great fixture in that team.
Oh, I appreciate you saying so. Yeah, 2020 is a rough year for a lot of people. And, yeah, it was the worst full season of my career for sure. And similar to the year I got released, you know, I kind of had my identity checked and shaken a little bit there during the year and putting way too much into performance and results and caring a lot about, you know, what was happening on the field day in and day out. And that's ultimately leads to you putting so much pressure on yourself. So about three quarters of the way through that season, obviously I struggled really bad. I was just like, you know what, I'm done with it, good or bad, whatever happens. I'm not going to let it dictate how I feel and carry myself the rest of the night or the next day or whatever it may be. So, you know, ultimately just having that perspective that no matter what it is, good or bad, it too shall pass, you know, and taking everything one day at a time, one pitch at a time, one game at a time, and just do my best with every opportunity I'm given. It's allowed me to, you know, stay focused, stay present, and produce a little bit more and play a little bit better and, you know, just keep my eyes focused on God and be grateful for the opportunity. And that's ultimately allowed me to have a lot more success these last couple of years.
Did that season of 2020, in retrospect, when you look back on it, does it make you think, wow, the pitching was really good that year, though you might not realize it at the time?
If I'm being 100% honest with you guys, I was living in California, and I knew people with cages and with gyms, weight rooms, all that stuff, and I couldn't get in anywhere. So the amount of preparation that went into that season was close to nothing. And I was kind of going off of, you know what, I'm good enough, I'll be fine, I don't need to be prepared, yada, yada, yada. You know, just thinking I was all high and mighty and good enough to go out and just play really well. And I would attribute my struggles a little bit more to that. Because, you know, while there was some pitchers, you know, on loan from organizations and stuff, the talent, and I'm sure as you guys know, it's a lot more relative than people realize. And, you know, it wasn't something rare to be seeing people throwing mid-90s with good, you know, good breaking stuff. So I wouldn't say the stuff was incredibly different. There was probably a little bit more depth in the league for sure, especially with, like, the concentrated teams and all the talent. What was it, six teams that year or eight teams? There was just less teams, so the talent was a little bit more concentrated. But, you know, that lack of preparation, you know, that's where I gain a lot of my confidence and trust, too, is I prepare and I'm very diligent in how I do that and go about that. So going into that season without that, I thought I'd be fine. You know, my ego is getting into it a little bit. And then, you know, pretty quickly there, I started struggling. And then just had to kind of take a step back and go, you know what, at the end of the day, this stuff doesn't matter. Just got to go do my best. And then I started playing well right before the playoffs.
You know, one of the things that's been very impressive for you, Zach, is that it seems like a part of your game gets better every year. Last year, you had a huge home run number, still kept the stolen bases up, batting average is great. Do you focus on a particular area coming into a season saying, I want to be a little bit better this year in this?
Yes and no. I kind of just try to stay, you know, wherever I left off the year before. I want to improve in every aspect of my game if possible, especially with the end goal being in mind, playing in the big leagues. And I'm 30 now, so I'm obviously getting up there in age comparative to a lot of the other players on my team and in the league. And, you know, in order to get an opportunity to get picked up, these scouts need to look at me and go, okay, this guy's big league ready. So the only way I can do that is, you know, outperform myself last year. I thought I did enough last year to warrant an opportunity in AA or AAA somewhere and, you know, maybe get a call late in the season just to get an opportunity somewhere if someone got hurt or go fill in. But it wasn't good enough. And like you said, yeah, my numbers were up last year. So basically going into this offseason and heading into this upcoming year, the year we just got underway here, I was like, okay, I'm going to do everything I did last year and then some. Because, you know, if it doesn't happen for me this year, I'm going to be moving on. This will be it for me if I don't get picked up this year. Because, you know, like I was saying before, age isn't on my side. And these scouts want to see, you know, youth and projectability with a lot of people they sign. So I need to be outperforming everybody and just show it in the numbers. So I've kind of just been trying to get everything better. So, yeah, keep my speed, keep my defense the way it is. That's a little bit easier to do those two. Hitting is a little bit different. You know, you get different guys coming to this league every year. You get some similar guys you'll know. The new guys, you got to try to find reports on and figure out how to develop a good approach and what's going to work against them. And kind of like I said, it's just one day at a time. So just trying to do everything you can each day to perform better. And as far as the power numbers going up, I made a couple little mechanical changes with my swing, but ultimately it's getting a good pitch to hit. So that's something I did not do this past week in Milwaukee, and I didn't do too well there. At least I got one home run, but my numbers weren't that great this past week. And ultimately it was just, you know, they were getting me to swing it, not my pitch. So it's being able to, you know, take a strike here or there, be willing to strike out looking if the pitch is borderline or maybe a ball that you don't want to swing at, and be okay with that, and then know what your plan is and stick to it and be able to not miss that pitch when you get what you're looking for.
I imagine there's a little extra motivation when you look to your right in the outfield and you see Delino DeShields there, and the fact that he's probably going to get scouted and maybe signed back to a big league club, but those scouts may also notice some other guys while they're there.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's a tremendous opportunity. You know, not only him, but we've got a couple young guys on our team too. Most notably, Ryan Hernandez, he hit a grand slam yesterday. I think he hit 30 home runs in his last 60 games total at U of H or something. I don't know how he didn't get drafted, but there should be some eyes on our team. And like you said, with Delino as well, it's a good opportunity because you know he's getting looked at. So it gives me the opportunity to do the same and just, you know, play to the best of my ability and show somebody that I got some left in the tank and I got some to offer an organization.
This last offseason, you played winter ball for the first time. Was that something that you just wanted to do because you'd never done before kind of thing? Or was this also to get an additional look by teams?
A little bit of both. So, you know, going through independent ball, it's definitely different, you know, when you, other than an affiliated ball. So if you're an affiliated ball, you're still a phone call or two away, and things seem a little bit more possible, I guess, is the word you would say, when you're with the organization to get called up and get that opportunity with teams. So a lot of guys, and I'm sure you've noticed the trend, a lot of guys are leaving independent ball and going down to Mexico, which I think their summer league is considered an independent league now as well. But a lot of guys are going down there because they can pay a lot better than the independent leagues in the United States. So going down there this winter was partially to, you know, just continue playing to show teams I can play against, you know, other guys that are in the big leagues currently that go down there to play or whatever it may be. And then also just kind of get my foot in the door in Mexico, because at the time I was considering going down there for this summer and playing there this summer to make some better money before I, you know, eventually hung up my cleats, whether that is, you know, this year or in 3 years, whatever it may be. But I ultimately decided I didn't want to go down there and, you know, play in Mexico for 4 or 5 years in their summer league, because, you know, my goal is still to play in the big leagues in the United States. So I figured it'd be better to come back here and do that. But I actually broke my hand at the end of the season when I was down there in December, a few weeks before Christmas. I got hit by a pitch and broke my hand, which wasn't fun. But other than that, it was a pretty great experience.
This year, the team playing exceptionally well. That, as you mentioned, that lineup is absolutely spectacular. When you go up to games every night, do you guys feel like we can easily score 6-7 runs in these games most nights?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't know. I know Brad was talking about it, I think, yesterday after our game. I think we scored like 90 runs in 10 games or something like that, or maybe 88. We're on a tremendous pace, and you know, obviously there's going to be the pitching duels and the low scoring ball games, but it's 1 through 9. I think anybody in this lineup is a threat to take a pitcher deep at any moment. And, you know, I was talking about it with Sermo and with Hill the other day, you know, the middle of our lineup, you know, we were 3, 4, 5. We weren't doing much for a couple of games there in Milwaukee. And we were still putting up 9, 10, 11 runs. And it's like, you know, when the middle of your lineup's doesn't do something on a given day, and you're still putting up 9 or 10 runs, that's really good. And it just speaks to the amount of depth that we have. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we can do moving around our lineup. There's a lot of danger in there for opposing pitchers, and we definitely feel like we can put up 6 or 7 runs on any given night. And you know, not not enough credit, I think, goes to Logan Watkins and putting this team together, because he did just an incredible job getting the amount of talent he did and the depth that we do have. And we haven't even had everybody yet. Edwin Arroyo is still coming once he's done this Puerto Rican league. And then Elmer Reyes has been gone down in Nicaragua. He's going to be joining us soon, too. So there's even a little bit more depth. I just hope, you know, obviously we all want to get picked up and back to affiliated baseball, but there's a little part of me that's like, it would be exciting to see what this team could do if they stayed together for a full season, you know? So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Yesterday was the 10th game of an 11-day road trip. I would not blame a team if they knew it's the last game on the road before they finally get to go back home, if they laid an egg or their heads just weren't in it. But you guys didn't do that. You guys were laser focused and put quite a hurting on the Milkmen yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I think we were in there and we were 3-2 on the week going into Sunday, and one of the games we dropped, I think we all felt it could have gone the other way, and we felt we should have won and been 4-1. So I think it was an unsaid, you know, feeling amongst the clubhouse that we were going to go out there. And I mean, every day you want to go get a victory, but I think we wanted to make sure we came out of there with the series victory. We didn't want to go 3-3 and tie them, because we feel we're the better team. And we were a little upset we dropped one of those games earlier in the week. So it was good to get out of there with four wins and take care of business yesterday on a Sunday. Plus, like you said, long road trip, even longer bus ride, it seems. You know, some of those bus rides seem like they take forever. It's nice to go out on a good note and get a victory going into that off day and traveling back home.
Going from here, you get Milwaukee early on in the season, as you mentioned here. You come away with four victories out of that. Now Chicago comes to town for you guys. You feel like you've got an opportunity to really set the stage of, hey, we're the team to beat in this division.
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of people don't think that's the case. For whatever reason, you know, from what I've heard, you know, I think there's some other teams that, you know, they might have some star-studded rosters and just look a little better out of the gates to some people, I guess. But I think people are going to be surprised with how we continue to play as the season plays out here. And I think we will, you know, make a name for ourselves and let people know, hey, you know, in the Eastern Division, Cleveland's not messing around. They're here to play, and they can beat anybody on any night. So we just got to, you know, keep stringing together quality at-bats and keep pulling for each other. And, you know, one thing I will speak to with this team as well, something different than I've seen in years past, is not only just a ball club filled with, like, really quality talent and athletic players, but there's also just kind of this, you know, it's hard to explain. It's like it's a really, really good chemistry in the locker room. It's just a bunch of good dudes. And you can build team chemistry, but it's in professional baseball, you know, you're getting people from all different places, and sometimes people don't mesh very well, and obviously there's always one or two here or there, but this whole group of guys just seems to mesh really well, and it seems, you know, at least for all the teams I've been on, a little more close-knit than most of the other teams I've been on. So I think that is another thing that's going to play into us playing really well, is it's just a good close group of guys, and that just was easy from the get-go, and that's not always the case. So I think that's going to help us play a little better as things pan out as well.
Do you feel that some of that chemistry dates back all the way to last season with the run that you guys went on just to get into the playoffs, and maybe that bond that you guys grew last year has spilled over to the guys that returned from that ball club?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm definitely close with all the guys that did return. I think there's only six of us, if I'm correct. So it's not a big number. And I think, in counting Edwin, I guess it's three position players. So seven and then the four pitchers. Edwin's still not there yet. But, yeah, I mean, I've known Edwin, playing against him for so long. He was in Chicago for a few years. I definitely got a lot closer with Hill Alexander. And then all the other pitchers I've known since even prior to last year. So maybe that just, you know, core group of guys is, we're obviously tighter as time goes on, but for whatever reason, all the new guys that came in, they've meshed really well, and we all get along. So it's just been a really good fit of the returners we do have and all the new guys that did come in. Plus the combination of experience and young talent that we have. You know, the young guys are wanting to learn from the older guys. The old guys are willing to help, and everything's, you know, clicking and gelling so well. It's just kind of seamless. It's been really, really good.
You know, Zach, you brought this up a little earlier, and I'm kind of curious. Definitely a five-tool guy. A guy I think every year Kevin and I talk on the show about why isn't this guy an affiliate ball. Are you ever given any impression that teams are looking at you and giving you an opportunity, or you can't even put that in your mind, you just got to go out there and play ball?
So prior to last season, it was the latter. I just was going out there playing and expecting, you know, oh, if I put up really good numbers and play really well, somebody's going to see me and someone's going to pick me up. Well, I did that for a few years and nobody called, nobody wrote, nothing happened. And, you know, I'd hear a call from a scout every now and again to either a manager or someone in the front office, and they'd say, hey, so-and-so's watching you, or hey, so-and-so's someone interested. But it would be someone needs to get hurt, or, you know, they'll be in touch, and nothing ever amounted from it. So last year, I used to have an agent affiliated ball, and the year I got released and went into independent ball, I was doing really well when I was in Wichita in 2018, about a month and a half in. I think I was hitting 340 with like five home runs, and I called him, and he had no idea I was playing well, wasn't working to try and get me signed, so we went our separate ways then. But I essentially, like you said, I didn't do anything. I was just kind of trying to play and hope something would happen. But last year, as I was saying, I collected a lot of contact information for organizations, whether it be farm director, scouting director, assistant general manager, whoever I could get with all the organizations. And I started sending out emails of, you know, slight changes that I'd made, why I believe I deserved a shot, what my numbers were currently, how my numbers matched up with, you know, current players, with like bat speed, exit velocity, all that stuff. Because, you know, a lot of it's about numbers nowadays. So I want to make sure, oh, can you hit the ball 110 miles an hour? Can you do this? Can you do that? How many bases do you steal? How fast are you? So kind of all that information paired with why I want to get signed. And I did get a couple of responses from a couple organizations that garnered a little bit of interest towards the end of last year. So it wasn't until last season that I was proactive about that, and that helped me get a little more interest, and I'll definitely be doing that as this season goes on. So hopefully, you know, if there's a right fit and somebody needs an outfielder and gets an email from me or ends up seeing me in a game, and that opportunity opens up for me this year. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Zach, it's great to hear that you feel so positive about this team and you're really excited about this lineup, because there are some out there in the American Association who will say that Brad has a little bit of a tendency to exaggerate a little bit. So it's good to know that you're feeling confident about this club.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a good ball club. I mean, it's like I said, up and down, anybody can hurt you. I mean, you're getting, you know, the last couple of days, you know, like I said, Milwaukee kind of had my number. I hit a few balls hard yesterday. I think we scored 14 runs on 15 hits yesterday, or maybe it's 15 runs on 14 hits, and I went 0-for-6. And, you know, it's always tough to have an 0-for when your team goes off. And I hit a couple balls hard and, like, just could not get anything to fall yesterday. Ended up having one strikeout. But I was sitting there and, you know, looking around the dugout, and a couple of the guys, you know, a couple of the rookies, like, putting together 7-8 pitch at-bats, getting a clutch RBI single or RBI double. And I'm just like, you know what? This team is really, really deep. And I was just sitting there yesterday thinking about that while I was in the dugout. And it's like, you know, this is going to be good, because if one person doesn't have it on any given day, there's eight other guys right there, you know, to pick them up. Or if there's a few guys that don't have it, all the other guys, like, we're all out there busting our butts, doing our best to win. It's not just, you know, obviously we all want to get picked up, but you can tell everybody there wants to win and wants to compete too. So sometimes you don't get that. It's nice to have a full team of guys that are all out there for the same goal.
Well, Zach, we appreciate you joining us here tonight. You're a first-time guest of the show, so you get to
well, let's not end this so quick, guys, because...
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Because this is one of the rare times in which I've actually done homework for this show. So at about, I don't know, 6 o'clock tonight, I came up with a little feature called Give Us the Fact, Zach. And what I'm going to do is give you a little question for you. They're going to range from legitimate to ridiculous by the time we're done with it. But it'll go really quick, so here we go. Who is... Who is the best overall athlete that you have shared a field with?
Oh, man. Best overall athlete I shared a field with. I'm going to go ahead and say Mike Trout, because when I was with the Diamondbacks, I got called up for one of the spring games against the Angels, and Trout and Pujols were warming up on the other side of the field while I was warming up, and it was,
wow.
I mean, I didn't get in while they were in the game, but just sitting there being able to watch them from the opposing dugout, you know, Trout is, you know, what everybody thinks he is. He's incredible, and I'm pretty sure he had a home run that day. I don't remember exactly, but I was in awe and still am.
Wow. Well, now looking at the questions, I think that's probably the only legitimate hardcore question. So we're going to ask the second question that we've asked pretty much anyone that's ever been on the show. Whataburger or In-N-Out Burger?
I'm going to say In-N-Out Burger, but I have a problem with this question. You know, I'm from California, but now I'm a Texas native. I love Whataburger, and I think they shouldn't be compared because one is just a burger place. In-N-Out, all they do is burgers and fries. Whataburger does so much more. So I feel like they are just in different ballparks. You know, if you're honey butter chicken biscuit, you know, honey barbecue chicken strip sandwich, there's just so much diversity that Whataburger offers that In-N-Out doesn't offer. So I don't know if you can directly compare them.
Okay. Next question. You're out for a night on the town. I don't know where you'd go outside Cleburne, maybe Dallas, Fort Worth. You're out with the fiance for a night out. Honky tonk, nightclub, or sports bar?
Oh, probably honky tonk or sports bar, but we're probably going to leave early, get Taco Bell on the way home, and watch a movie when we get back. We don't stay out too late. We're not partiers, really. We're old souls.
All right. The next question, based on all the travel that you guys have been having to do by bus, what is your favorite truck stop food of choice?
Oh, man. This is hard. What do you mean not a legitimate question? That's a hard-hitting question right there. We going healthy or unhealthy? Because that matters.
Well, truck stop, so I guess we're leaning towards unhealthy.
Okay. Let's go. Truck stop pizza or a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Well, you'd find my wife in agreement with that one. Okay. As the news came out earlier in the season that the depot at Cleburne Station will now be referred to as La Moderna Field, what is your favorite meat or other item to have with macaroni and cheese?
I would say brisket mac and cheese. That's grown on me. I had never had it until I got to Texas, and I've had it a number of times, and it's incredible. So brisket.
All right, and now the final question.
Yes, sir.
The Jerry Dome, home of the Dallas Cowboys, or the Brad Allred Mansion, what is the most impressive structure in Texas?
Well, I've never been to the Jerry Dome, so I'll have to go to the Brad Allred Mansion. Oh, man.
That's fantastic. Well, Zach is our guest here tonight. We give you the opportunity for a final thought. So whatever you'd like to talk about, the floor is yours.
I just want to say for anybody that ends up listening to this, kind of like I said earlier and going back to my days in Milwaukee, this too shall pass. And you got to remember that. So good or bad, whatever's going on, especially bad stuff, a lot of bad stuff going on in the world today. I want everybody to know, you know, just take a deep breath and give it a minute because things will get better. So whether stuff's good or bad, just remember it's going to get better. It's going to change moving forward. So take a breath and just focus on the present moment.
That's a fantastic final thought. Zach Narrier, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
I appreciate it. Of course, yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me, and you guys be good. Let me know if there's anything else I can help with.
Well, Kevin, great having Zach on, and for fans out there, the reason we had it a little short here tonight was because, as Zach said, it's his day off, and he wanted to spend a little time with his fiance. So we didn't want to keep him too long. We appreciated spending time with him, but, man, he's right. That closer lineup is really looking brutal so far this year, Kevin.
Oh, it definitely is. You know, I was on doing the first game of the season with Brad Allred doing some color, and I said after the first game, I said it's really easy in sports to put a lot of emphasis on the first game. We like to just jump out to conclusions really quick that, oh, no, we lost the first game. What kind of season is this going to be? And it wasn't a good day for the Railroaders, but, you know, they proved me right. They struggled offensively the first day, but, boy, I mean, they've just been a juggernaut ever since, and they're on some kind of a roll now going into a six-game homestand against a divisional rival.
What I think is so crazy about that, too, Kevin, that if you look at this Cleburne team, the two guys with the worst batting average at this point on the team are Jose Sermo and Zach Narrier. And you know both of these guys are going to have phenomenal years. So you think, man, this life is really going to get scary when those two catch fire.
Well, you know, as Zach was saying, too, on the show, that, you know, there's enough guys where if someone's fighting it for a day, there's going to be another guy that's going to pick him up. I know on opening day, I saw Ryan Hernandez hit his first professional home run, and I just thought right away, you know, this kid's going to be something. And when you got a guy with that kind of power playing first base, and on the roster he is occupying a rookie spot, that's just a huge bonus right there. Well, like Zach said, who knows how much longer he'll be around. I mean, someone, you keep putting out a power show, somebody's going to take notice, especially when it's someone that's fresh out of college.
Well, Cleburne out of the gates here, the top in the East Division at 7-3 right now. Team has looked phenomenal. But, boy, they have some real challenges coming up here, Kevin. Chicago in for six for them. Then they travel on to Sioux City, the best team in the American Association early on, four games. Then travel on to Kansas City. But we're going to really find out what this team's about. 13 games against three of the best teams in the league right now. They're going to have to really bring their A game over the next 2 weeks.
I think we're going to find out a lot more about this ball club because I think the Dogs pulls an interesting challenge. You know, they had three very good games. I believe they took two out of three against Fargo and Moorhead over the weekend. We've seen at times in Chicago the pitching's been really good, and we've seen at other times that it's been bats have got the job done. Then they go to Sioux City. That's going to be a really interesting matchup against Sioux City's pitching and Cleburne's batting. And then they go to Kansas City, and Kansas City seems to be finding their mojo a bit after stumbling out of the gates.
Well, let's move on to Chicago here for a moment, Kevin. First of all, I'll begin with Jake Dahlberg, chosen by us today as the pitcher of the week. The league went with Solomon Bates. We don't have it. You know, he had a great week as well. But Jake Dahlberg was pitted in a fantastic pitcher's duel with Tyler Beardsley of the Kane County Cougars, where it was a scoreless tie through the first five innings. Dahlberg came out after seven, allowed seven hits, didn't walk anybody, seven scoreless innings for the club. A guy we expected to be the ace of the staff, and he's been very good for the club early on.
Yes, he has been, and that's you know, that's key for a Chicago club where last year you just didn't know who were going to be the guys that were going to anchor the pitching staff and consistently bring in quality starts. But getting a guy like Jake Dahlberg back has been huge for the Dogs club.
Yeah, very good for them. And a guy that they need to really step up because, as you mentioned, we're not really sure exactly how this rotation is going to pan out. There's some exceptional arms out there. Guys coming back from some injuries are going to have to figure out where they sit in the staff. But, boy, he's been very good for this club. And Chicago's in an interesting situation, Kevin, because they travel to Cleburne for these six games, then come home for a huge six-game set, Winnipeg in for three, Milwaukee in for three. This East Division is already going to be very tough as it is. You have nine of your next 12 games battling against two of the top teams in the division, and Chicago is a team that really, I think we're still kind of looking for this identity besides Josh Altman and what he brings to the table.
Let's face it, you know, when we picked our playoff teams, we did not give this team a lot of love. So, you know, maybe the Dogs are playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder too, thinking, hey, you know what, we're not being respected by those knuckleheads that do that one podcast. So maybe that's been the motivation thus far. And maybe we'll be heading into the next couple of weeks.
I would be perfectly fine with them using me as that dope over there doesn't think enough of us and going out there and winning, because this is still a club with a lot of talent to it. And Josh Altman, I mean, really a guy stepping up right now. An okay season last year. I guess we got kind of spoiled on the 29 homer a year in 2021, but had a 15 home run season last year, already off to 5 homers, an early MVP guy you got to be looking at.
Maybe the coming back to hit at Impact Field has had a difference on him, because we remember last year, Altman, even though, like you said, it was a pretty pedestrian season for him, he put on quite a show at the Home Run Derby. So maybe and I know his family's from the area, so maybe a comfortable setting for him is elevating his game a bit.
As Kevin mentioned, they take 2 out of 3 from Fargo. They've taken 2 out of 3 from each of their opponents so far this season. And while we're on taking 2 out of 3, the Gary South Shore Railcats, Kevin, have lost the first game of each of their series, come back to win the next 2 of all of them, and they're tied for second place in this division.
Unbelievable. It just goes to show you how tough this division is going to be this year. There's just so many good ball clubs. There's not going to be a team that's going to only win 25 games. You know, you look at probably the top 4 or 5 teams in this league are teams that you're just going to have to battle every night. And Gary Salcher, I don't know how you get the team motivated to win that elusive first game of the series. I can't think of any other way or any other preparation for that, but it does seem to be an oddity that they've lost the first game of each and then came back and won the second and third.
You know, I have to say, in watching this team play and looking at this lineup, I have a great deal of respect for the job that Lamar Rogers has done with this team. But I got to say, I don't think I've had enough respect. I'm looking at a guy like Daniel Lingua. Did you think he'd be batting 4th or 5th in this lineup? I mean, what a great hitter. Batting 9th most nights at a .379 for the top hitter on the team. But he's ensuring that lineup is always turning over and keeping innings alive by having Lingua bat late. Michael Woodworth at top of the order has been phenomenal for them as a great leadoff hitter. LG Castillo batting later on in the lineup, and it's keeping that, you know, that batting order going through. And I think this team is a lot more dangerous than some might believe. And we haven't even seen some of the big bats on this club really catch fire yet. So I think this is going to be a team that is going to be very scary. As long as that pitching doesn't wear down like it did last year, this is a playoff team, I think.
Did I see there was one night where Sam Abbott, who broke the team single-season home run record last year, I saw there was a night he was hitting 8th in that lineup. That should tell you a lot right here.
Absolutely. And they're going to get a great opportunity here coming up too, Kevin. Just going up against a struggling Lake Country team for 3 games this week, then go home to face a struggling Kane County team for 3 games. So you're going to have 6 contests, which you could easily come out and keep up their pattern of 4-2, but this could be a sweep for this team as well, as they have an opportunity at facing 2 struggling clubs.
And once again, unless you follow this league closely, this is a Gary South Shore ball club that is still going to sneak up on people, because they don't have, you don't see a lot of Gary batters peppering the leaderboards and on the offensive or the pitching side of it, but they're getting some guys now that have had experience in this league, know what they need to do to win and be ready to play in this league. And it's a dangerous ball club, but yet it's a ball club because of the lack of big names. They're still going to sneak up on other teams.
Well, let us jump to the fourth place team in this division, Milwaukee. Very tough week. They won games 1 and 4 against Cleveland, but dropped 4 of the 6 contests. Band got battered over the last couple of games of that series, giving up 26 runs. Actually gave up at least 8 runs in each of the final 4 games of that set. The pitching staff's got to be concerned. Already losing 5-1 tonight here in Kansas City if they travel there for 3 games. Anthony Barone maybe have to pull some rabbits out of his hat to get this pitching staff going.
Well, we know that Anthony Barone has been pretty good at going out and finding arms in the middle of the season, and the guys that he has right now are not panning out. But, I guess going into the season, I guess it looked like the resumes of the guys that he was trotting out were looking pretty good. So it's, sometimes you got to tip your hat to the other team, too. Especially we've been talking enough about Cleveland and how well they've been hitting that. Maybe it just caught the wrong team at the wrong time, but I'd have to say if this becomes a pattern and not a blip, there might be some moves being made by Anthony Barone.
Dropping to Lake Country, Kevin, the big news today, manager Jim Bennett replaced as manager of the club. They will have the pitching coach run with the team for the remainder of this season, but a guy that you and I have an incredible amount of respect for, Jim Bennett's a guy that is a solid manager and an even more impressive guy. I was very surprised by this move.
I was too. And, there's going to be critics out there going to say, well, his team in 2019 with Fargo Moorhead was built by Jeff Bittiger. Well, and that's true. I mean, Bitt's a hell of a player procurement guy. But you still got to have the guy in the field pressing the right buttons and working with the players to make the team go. And that was Jim Bennett's job in 2019. And they were a game away from the championship series. You go into last season where you're having to put a team together from scratch. It's not like the other sports, like the NHL, where you can go out and have this nice big expansion draft and poach some talent from other teams. You're building it from scratch. And last year it was a struggle for the Dockhounds, let's be perfectly honest about it. And it's the first American Association team that Bennett has had to put together. This season I thought he came into it with some better pieces. I liked the addition of Tyler Pike to the pitching staff. I felt that Carlos Diaz was a nice piece at the end of the bullpen if he was healthy. And I just think this, to me, it felt like an overreaction. Were they 2-6 was the record?
Yes.
Okay, how many times have I talked about if you have a stretch at the end, in the middle of July where you go 2-6, you're just like, well, it looks like they're struggling a little bit. But you're not thinking about a managerial change. So who knows? You and I have our regular jobs to work. We don't get to go snoop around and find out what's going on in the locker room in Kane County. We don't, we're not beat writers. So, for those listening, we wish we could tell you why this happened, but frankly, we don't know. We can all have our theories, but in the end, guys will eventually talk. Guys that are on the team currently or around the team, eventually word gets around the league as to what exactly went down. But I just hope, and I thought this was an interesting observation that our friend in Winnipeg, Craig Kuhlman, made, that pitching coach Paul Wagner was not on the trip with the Dockhounds. But today he's named the interim manager. So I don't know if this was something that was in the works over the weekend that, hey, let's get the team through the week and then we'll make the announcement and start fresh. I really hope it's not a thing where the Dockhounds want Paul Wagner managing it, a former Milwaukee Brewer, thinking that's going to put butts in the seats, because as you and I were talking about before, that doesn't do it. You can have the most popular player ever managing your ball club, but they're not playing. And they're not playing. It doesn't matter. People don't go to the Kansas City Monarchs games to watch Frank White coach first base. who's the greatest hitter of all time from the 50s? Ted Williams, right? Ted Williams had one of the worst managerial records ever with the Washington Senators. So if you're making a managerial move just to have a name as your manager that would connect with local fans and maybe sell a few extra tickets, that doesn't play well. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that's not the reasoning, but I just can't find, without actually being involved with the situation, I can't find any other potential logic to it.
You know, Kevin, I was thinking about this too, is that the first season that the Chicago Dogs played here in the American Association, I believe at one point they were 1-15. They went through a stretch where they lost 15 of 16 games. Nobody was clamoring for Butch Hobson to lose the job. You know, Butch Hobson had an established record, is a proven winner, and continues to win. And he had one of the worst stretches the American Association has ever seen. But you know what? Everybody knows Butch Hobson will deliver it. I don't know if the team just thought Jim Bennett can't turn that around or something like that. This is a very tough division. Everybody's good, but I think this guy knows how to push the right buttons on a club. And he had a very unfortunate start to the season of having to face a Milwaukee team that entered this season wanting to say, man, we made the playoffs last year. We were a couple outs away from winning the championship, and we're coming out here to battle. Then you take on a Sioux City team that's the hottest team in the league, and then you travel to Winnipeg for their home opening weekend with a new manager in place. That's not an easy set of games to start out with there. So I don't feel like 2-6 was necessarily a terrible start to this year, depending upon what you're looking at for them to play. But okay, you know, I don't get it, and maybe we'll be proven wrong here, but I think it was a foolish move. So that's my thoughts on it.
And that's my frustration. I was talking with online with a couple of people about this as the news came down. I wish we had guys that were beat writers in this league that covered these teams daily, and someone would come out with a column. Okay, Jim Bennett leaves, this and this happened. This caused it to happen. We don't get that in this league. There's, you know, one of my very first columns or first blogs I ever wrote was defending St. Paul Saints manager at the time, George Samus. And I wrote that a tough thing for Samus is that when he makes a decision and it's a controversial one and the fans might not understand it, there is nobody to ask him the tough questions in order to get the answers out where the fans go, oh, okay, that's why we did that. In a way, it's a blessing because you per se don't have anyone to answer to, but it's a curse because there's sometimes you do want to get the word out, okay, this is why this is happening, but nobody gets to find out because there's nobody asking the tough questions. I mean, frankly, Rob, well, you and I are probably the closest things in this league to beat writers. And, you know, how are two guys like us that work regular daily pay jobs, how are we going to be able to get the inside scoop on 12 different American Association teams?
And, you know, provide information to us. Yeah, and people provide information to us. You know, we have some background information on you know, what's kind of happening behind the scenes, but sometimes that stuff is nobody else's business too. But sometimes it's, even after you hear explanations of stuff, you're still scratching your head going, I don't really get this move. And, you know, here's the thing I look at it too, Kevin. You're a brand new franchise. You're trying to establish yourself in a community where, you know, there's a lot of minor league baseballs, you know, around the area there. You got Beloit that's not that far away. You got Milwaukee Milkmen. You got a major league team not that far down the road. You got Appleton up there for single-A baseball. You got a lot of wood bat teams out there. You got a lot of competition. And a Jim Bennett isn't just a guy that you can say, you know, we have a good manager. You have a classy, first-rate human being. and a great ambassador for your club. And you know, when you're trying to establish yourself as a team, it would seem to me that'd be a priority. You want somebody that fans would go, I like that guy. You know, that's a great human being. That's a guy we'll go out there and we'll cheer for that team because, you know, he's not some pompous jerk. And I think that, no offense, Paul Wagner. I don't know him personally. I don't know much about him as a human being, but I just kind of look at this and I think you got rid of somebody who was a first rate human being. And that's, was a challenging move, I'll say this is the way I'll put it.
Well, we saw something similar. The Milwaukee Milkmen stumbled out of the gate in 2019 with Gary McClure. And they made a move to Anthony Barone. Well, I think they graduated were making it Barone coached under McClure, and then they made the move. But, okay, if you're trying to, if you're going into it thinking, hey, you know, Milwaukee did this and became a winning ball club and won a championship in 2020, that's a lot of pressure to put on Paul Wagner to say, well, okay, we're giving you the reins. Well, we expect to have a championship ball club in 12 months. That's a lot of pressure to put on one guy. Let's face it, Anthony Barone has done a tremendous job with the Milkmen, but you know, Anthony Barone's just don't grow on trees.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And he was a Anthony Barone is a lot of times the what makes him so incredible is that he is that kind of exception. You know, you and I have watched managers come and go in this league. We've seen a lot of can't miss managers. Okay, guys that they said this guy is the next great thing. Okay, I'm not going to mention the names, but five come to my mind right off the bat that I thought were going to be flat-out studs in this league and did not deliver. And everybody said they were going to be great. Okay, and I don't mean it any disrespect to them. The situation may not be right. You don't have the right kind of club, the right kind of ownership support. I totally get all of that. Okay, but I don't know exactly what the support is from the ownership group in there in Lake Country. I'm hoping they're all in on everything. I'm going to go 100% believe in that. They want this team to win and they'll do what it takes. Okay. But man, an Anthony Barone is a rare exception. Logan Watkins is a rare exception, you know, kind of thing. And, I can't think of, and you and I watch a lot of minor league and independent league baseball. I can't think of a lot of great coaches out there right now that I would turn and go, yep, that guy. I mean, I look at like a Bobby Post or an Anthony Renz. Neither one of them are leaving where they're at. So, you know, that's the next great guy, but they're not going anywhere. So I don't know who you even turn to if you're trying to make a change. So, we'll find out.
And it sounds like Anthony Renz would be off the market anyways because it sounds like he's going to take the post at Concordia Moorhead that Chris Colts is leaving. So,
exactly right. And Bobby Post, you know, moved to Sioux City. He and Steve Montgomery are kind of attached at the hip. I think mutually that they both want that. Bobby doesn't want to be, necessarily the manager, but he knows he's getting all the credit in the world because he's probably the best pitching coach in partner league baseball, if not across the minor league. The guy's phenomenal. So, you know, he's a guy that delivers. So, but he's not taking a managerial job anywhere else. He doesn't want all the headaches and stuff like that to go with what Steve Montgomery has to put up with. So, you're not getting a guy like that. Both guys in Milwaukee are amazing. I don't know, Boston has been fantastic as a hitting coach for the Milkmen, but I'm not sure if he's ready to move on from this point. So if I look at some of these guys, I'm just not sure who's out there for you to even find to replace. So maybe our buddy Tom Vaith will be heading that way, Kevin.
Well, there's an old saying that goes, the only thing that's for sure is nothing's ever for sure.
Yes, that's very true. Well, let's finish up with our last team here in the East, Kevin. And surprisingly, the Kane County Cougars off to a very tough start early on here, Kevin.
They are, and let's face it, I mean, they've ran into some buzzsaws, too, within that, with they got swept over the weekend by the red-hot Sioux City Explorers, and as we talked about, Chicago's been playing good baseball, so, you know, that's losing 5 out of 6 at home against two ball clubs playing pretty good baseball. It's not time to panic in Kane County, but you know the talent is there. It's just a matter of maybe getting a little bit of luck on their side and, frankly, just getting maybe a little bit of a lighter schedule, too, to get back on track.
The one thing I wasn't surprised about, Kevin, was I figured this team was going to pitch pretty well, and they have been, you know, in games for the most part. You know, they lost 4-2 and 3-2 to Sioux City. They lost 2-0 to Chicago on Thursday. I think they've gotten some pretty solid pitching. I thought this offense was going to have its struggles, and Jimmy Kerrigan hasn't homered yet, hitting 143 right now. TJ Bennett hasn't hit a home run yet. I think both those guys we expect to hit in the 20-plus homers. Josh Allen right now leading the team, and he got the team lead by homering in each of the last two games. And I'm glad to see him turning things around here a little bit. But I felt the offense was going to be the struggle for this club this season, and I'm still really not sure what this offense is going to look like.
As great as Jimmy Kerrigan's numbers were last year, let's face it, he did fade down the stretch in the last month or so. And, you know, in the back of my mind going into the season, that had me wondering if those struggles were going to continue into this season. Granted, it's a 9-game sample size, and 6 of your games have been either against Fargo's pitching or Sioux City's pitching, so it's tough to make a judgment in either direction right now. But frankly, Jimmy Kerrigan has not put up Jimmy Kerrigan-like numbers thus far. And I diddle that on Josh Allen, a big home run the other night to tie the game up in the 9th inning, and good to see him back and producing. And it's, you know, you and I have gotten to know him from having him on the show a couple times, and real easy guy to root for. So maybe someone like an Allen can get on a hot streak, put the team on his shoulders, and get things going.
One of our favorite guys for sure, and such a great veteran presence in the locker room. It doesn't matter whether you are the star of the team or the guy sweeping out the clubhouse. He's a guy everybody wants on their club. You know, everybody likes him. Just that phenomenal of a human being. So let's jump out to the West here, Kevin. And to make Steve Montgomery super happy, we're going to say those Sioux City Explorers stink. They're terrible. Because if we say something good about them, Kevin, and then they don't play well this week, he's going to criticize you and me. He's going to blame us.
Horrible team with horrible fans and horrible uniforms and horrible players.
That's what we're saying, because we know that we can't be at fault for that thing there. But they take 5 out of 6 this week, Kevin. They finish out their 6-game homestand to begin the year by taking 2 of 3 from Lake Country. Only a 14-6 loss where the pitching staff had their only really one bad game of the entire season. Then traveled on to King County where they wind up sweeping those 3 games. I mean, this club is just getting incredible pitching right now. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm a little surprised. I figured they were, you know, Steve Montgomery always has a pitching staff, but I was looking at this group to start off the season, but Solomon Bates is named by the league as the pitcher of the week, and they're getting great performances out of this bullpen. You know, this is what we expect out of a Steve Montgomery team.
And it's had to be the case, because if you look at the lineups, and granted, you know, sometimes the numbers don't tell the entire story, but there's really nobody in that lineup right now that's putting up like tremendous numbers or MVP-like numbers. It's been guys that they've gotten the job done when they needed to. They've got the clutch hit when they've had to get it, but it's they're not going out and winning games 10-6 or 12-8. It's been a reliance on the pitching, and the pitching has done a great job thus far.
Yeah, already 3 victories in extra innings, 2 walk-off victories for this team. Sean Rakowski, who's going to be the closer for this club, has had to come out and win 3 games late in contests. One save, three victories are right now, and a 1.28 ERA. He's been amazing in this role. And, I got to say, too, I've been very impressed by the fact of this club is not letting outside distractions or loss of Matt Poveranko and things like that affect them. They're just going out and playing solid baseball every night. And I wonder, too, Kevin, is that sometimes I think fans really get caught up in looking at, well, who's the big star of this club? I think, like, this is a very solid team, 1 through 9, 1 through 10 in the pitching staff, 1 through 11 in the pitching staff, that you just go, yeah, that guy's pretty good. That guy's pretty good. That guy's pretty good. And you just don't really find any weakness in this team.
No, you don't. And, eventually you've got to imagine a few of these guys on offense are going to break out and show the kind of success that they've had in previous seasons, and the pitching holds up. I mean, this team could really roll this season.
Let's jump to the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. I don't know why I'm throwing hyphen in there, but Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks are second in the division right now, 3 games behind Sioux City. A bit of a tough week for this club. They drop 2 of 3 in Chicago. They do take 2 of 3 from Winnipeg before the Gold Eyes return home there. This is a big stretch of road games for them, Kevin. 9 straight games that they're out on the road after finishing that Chicago series. They have 3 in Lincoln, 3 in Milwaukee. I feel like this is the biggest blip for this team right now. This is the toughest part of the season that they're going to have. They have a lot of home games coming after from July on. So I feel like if you come out of May and you're even around 500, there's no worry about this club at all because they haven't even really hit yet.
I just want to preface this with I have a tremendous amount of respect for Josh Buchholz. I've had the pleasure of knowing him since 2004, and his rise to executive director of the American Association has been quite an incredible story. But holy crap, go to Chicago, then go to Lincoln, and then go back over to Milwaukee for a 9-game trip? Wow. He kind of stuck it to his old ball club there.
That is a bit of travel. It's nice if you've gone Milwaukee to Chicago or something.
Well, you just wondered, and I know it's, Jack Michaels was talking about it on the broadcast yesterday. It is so tough to write a schedule that's going to be pleasing to every team. And once in a while, you do get in a tough situation like this with ideally you would like to play 3 in Chicago, 3 in Milwaukee, go to Lincoln for 3, and then go back up I-29 back home. But, schedules have to work for 12 teams, not just one. But I just had to get a little dig on our good friend Josh there for the 9-game zigzag tour the boys are going to be going on.
Like I said, Kevin, if they get through that, then you have 6 at home. That's 2 Falls and Lincoln. Then you just a trip down 94 to get to Lake Country for 3 games. Then you come back home for 6. So you're going to play 12 of 15 at home, and the one road trip is a 5-hour, 6-hour drive to Lake Country to get that series in. So, the team just has to endure this little bit of trouble right now. And right now, Kevin, the offense, not really putting up incredibly impressive numbers right now. Dylan Thomas finally getting a little bit better swing going on for himself. Carell Prime still battling out there and not doing very well pitching for this club right now at this point as well either. And I don't think there's any cause for concern. These guys are going to wind up hitting. And again, it's early on. I almost feel like if they had a very difficult May, it might be a little thing to get the fire under these guys and really get them going.
Well, if you remember last year, too, the Redhawks had a very road-intensive first month of the season, too, and that having success in the road galvanized the team. So when they were finally back home for a lot of games, they got on quite a roll. So I watched the Prime performance on Saturday night. He got through the first inning all right, but then he ran into trouble in the second inning and Chicago put up a three spot on him, so his outing went two innings. So I don't know if Prime's role is going to be as more of like an opener pitching an inning or two, or if they are just stretching him out to eventually become a full-fledged starter, which you'll expect five or six innings out of. So yeah, don't close the book on his pitching yet.
I have to say, I when Jack Michaels told us about Carell Prime pitching, I thought he was joking. But my apologies, Jack, that it looks like he's going to be a regular guy in the rotation. So we're excited to see what he winds up delivering out there.
He could become the American Association Shohei Ohtani.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Kevin, the Kansas City Monarchs were really struggling getting out of the gate, but a little home cooking created a nice weekend for them against Sioux Falls over the weekend.
Yeah, and the home cooking was fried canary because, boy, the Monarchs really put a hurting on the Sioux Falls pitching staff in sweeping the Canaries out of Legends Field.
Chris Herman named as the Player of the Week by both us and the American Association, and well-deserved after going 14 for 24 with 14 RBI, 7 runs scored. He homered 3 times during the week, including twice to start out the week in the same game. Just a phenomenal week by the veteran major leaguer. And, I was looking for somebody in this lineup to kind of step up and become a person that could become a formidable piece for them. Gavin Collins was getting on base, but wasn't putting up massive numbers from that. But Herman really stepped up his game, and the team caught fire because of it.
And maybe it was just a matter of getting back home and getting into some warmer weather, too, because if you look at the first 6 games for the Monarchs, it was 3 games in Sioux City, which was cooler weather at the time, and then 3 more in Gary, Indiana, which was... We know how Gary, Indiana can be in May. So maybe it was a matter of the bats literally warming up with a trip back home to get to play some games in Kansas City.
If there's one thing that I really look at this team and I have a little concern about here, Kevin, a lot of concern about, to be honest with you, is the performance of the defense for this team. Joe Calpietro has a reputation for building a very sound club. Last in the league, though, in amount of errors given up this season, 13 so far. Last in fielding percentage. And that's really hurt the pitching staff. The team has given up 45 runs, 45 earned runs, 11 unearned runs at this point. And that's just so un-Joe. That number really kind of surprises me.
And it's early in the season, too, and, you know, like you said, look at where they were playing, too, where, you know, that's tough on fielders when you're playing and the weather is a little less than optimal, too. You're trying to stay warm and you're trying to stay focused at the same time, and sometimes that just leads to a little bit of sloppiness on the defensive front. And it doesn't seem like, former big leaguer guy Brandon Finnegan got hit around a little bit by Sioux Falls, but pitched well otherwise. Outside of Finnegan, and I can see him as a guy that's going to get signed soon, that there's really not a lot about the Monarchs rotation that just scares me if I'm an opposing team. I believe it was Jalen Miller, I think, that was their opening day pitcher, and on last year's team, I don't remember him being like a key part of the ball club. So there's not a Matt Hall there that's going to go out every 5 days and give you 7 or 8 innings. So, the fielders are going to have to shore their game up, because when your pitching staff is a little iffy, you can't be giving teams 4 out innings.
Yeah, I think the challenge for this group is that most of the vet spots, I'm going to look this up just to make sure I'm speaking correctly, but I believe most of his vet spots Joe used on his fielders, and yeah, he did. So 2 in the outfield and catcher. So Brandon Finnegan and Jeff Singer are the 2 veterans in the pitching staff. The rest of the staff is primarily a lot of LS1s and a lot LS2s, a few LS4s and LS5s. So he's got a fairly young staff altogether, but I don't know if you can necessarily make a lot of moves to bring in great veterans unless you're going to get rid of a veteran to help you. You know, Dalton Moats hasn't looked great. Carlos Santamaria's look like he's trying to work some things out there. Patrick Weigel's pitched okay for them. You know, if those guys falter, you're looking to try to get another piece. You got to figure out which one of those guys is going to go. So Joe's always a great chess master out there figuring out how to get the puzzle together. So I'm not trying to throw dirt on anything over here because, you know, we trust in Joe. We believe he's going to come through.
Well, I think one of those answers could be, you know, I was discussing this last night, is much as minor league teams like to hoard catchers, you get a catcher like Chris Hermann off to such a blistering start, I can see him easily, if he puts up another good couple of weeks, I can easily see him getting signed by a major league ball club, and right there that opens up a veteran spot.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's a very likely scenario too, Kevin. I think if you're at the end of May, he's leading the American Association in hitting right now at 500. And if he's batting better than 400 June 1st or 2nd, I would not be surprised to see him headed out the door. Because, again, former major leaguer, you know, the resume is there. So I think that's a great point. The Winnipeg Goldeyes, Kevin, tied in third place in this Division II at 4-5, get off the week with a little bit of a tough start as they lose 2-3 in Fargo. Not a shame. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you do because Fargo is a tough place to play. But come home for their home opener and wind up winning the first two games before dropping Sunday's contest with the Lake Country. Winnipeg is getting some solid hitting here early on, Kevin, especially at home. 21 runs they scored over the weekend.
And that kind of surprised me a little bit because when you looked at the roster going into the season outside of all-star like Max Murphy, there just wasn't anything about this lineup that just said, wow, this is going to be a tough team to pitch to. But they're off to a good start, and it's, you know, it's a lot like what we were talking about earlier in the show with Gary Southshore. You know, you look at the lineup, and outside of Murphy, you're not seeing a lot of guys you've probably heard of or none that are American Association mainstays. But right now they're getting the job done, and, you know, maybe manager Greg Taggart's got to found himself a few gems.
Yeah, that's one thing he's really looking at that I'm sure that he's a little concerned about right now has been the starting staff. Six different guys have made starts for this team. Three of them have really struggled, and it is Landon Barossa has been fantastic for them, though. They're getting a couple of guys that have been very good for them. And I think you look at it and you say Luis Ramirez is a guy that you talked a little bit ago about Jimmy Kerrigan. Ramirez got off to a fantastic start last year. He had 10 victories. He was at 10 victories like July 20th, I think is what it was, or 25th or something like that, and could not get above that. He continually struggled over the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season. And I wonder, you know, kind of looking at this year, 1-1 with a 5.00 ERA, I wonder if, you know, maybe he reached his peak last year and you know, they're you're not going to get an ace out of this guy this year.
I think you look at the staff, it just seems like it's a lot like last year's too, where in theory, you know, there's guys that look like they should be key parts of your ball club, but they're not. You're not getting the quality starts out of them, and that might eventually be the downfall of your ball club.
The one thing that I would like to see, I think this is the big story for me to watch for Winnipeg this year, Kevin, because Greg Taggart historically his team has struggled a little bit getting out of the gate, and as the season went along, they just got better and better. You know, all the little nuances and things, all those little things that he does that really get a team to play and beat you with that gnat-like mentality start to pay dividends as the season's going along. And I wonder if what impact that has on this Goldeyes team. They're 4-5 right now, but a Greg Taggart-like philosophy, I wonder if this has this team in July and August, and all of a sudden they're just better and better with each passing week, and then you're just looking at this going, man, this team is unbelievable. Where did these guys come from? So Luis Ramirez, who's struggling out of the gate, winds up being, you know, 10-4 by the end of July, or about, you know, heading into August or something, and you're like, man, they sure turned things around, because that's just what Greg Taggart seems to do.
And, you know, some of these guys, too, I hate to keep droning on the weather, but it seems like there's a lot of pitchers that as the weather gets warmer, they also warm up along with it. So, you know, we could be seeing better days ahead for the pitching staff. And, you know, right, like I just said, once a team like Winnipeg could be a team like Taggart's old team in Gary, where the lineup doesn't wow you, but then they come to your park and they do a number on you, and you think, okay, what the heck just happened?
Lincoln Salt Dogs in fifth place, Kevin, currently 5 games behind Sioux City, 3-6. They have a little bit of a tough week as well. They lose 2 of 3 in Sioux Falls, then come home for their home opener. They win the first game before losing 2 to Gary South Shore. This is a team that I put up a huge 16 runs against Sioux Falls and in the final game of that set. But this is a team that is really struggling to score runs. Just 6 runs against Gary over the weekend. I just wonder where offense is coming from this club.
You have to wonder, and it just seems like whoever's playing against Sioux Falls, you're going to score a lot of runs and you're going to give up a lot of runs. And we saw that with a pretty wild 3-game set in Sioux Falls, in which, you know, it wasn't the bats that cost them a game. It was the bullpen once again that gave up 7 runs in the last of the 9th inning to blow a lead. So, but like you said, it's overall, you look at the bats and it's like there's not a Justin Bird there anymore that's going to be a spark plug for your team. Josh Altman's not there anymore. So, you know, who's gonna be that guy that's going to step up and be the spark plug that both of those guys were? I guess that's a question the Salt Dogs are still going to have to answer.
Unfortunately, Will Kenger hurt early on in the year out on the inactive list for a little while for them. So you lost one of those big bats in the lineup that you're really expecting to come up with big numbers. And unfortunately, Kevin, it doesn't get any easier for them. They come home to remain at home to take on Fargo-Moorhead and then travel to take on Sioux City. And so it's going to be another very tough week for these Salt Dogs.
I think that's a stretch where you hope you can get out of it going 3-3. You know, the guys that are struggling with Salt Dogs, one that is not is Nick Anderson, who had a couple home runs over the weekend and was a bright spot for the Salt Dogs offense, the former Kane County Cougar.
Absolutely. Been phenomenal for this group. Cam Touche has played very well for them at the leadoff spot. For this group, sat out a couple of games during the week there with some kind of nagging foot injury, I think, that he had there. But a guy that I think that they need really, if there's one guy on this team that I think has to start delivering better numbers for, it's a Nate Sampson. We know that he can hit well. He's battled injuries for the last couple of years and is getting up there a little bit in age. But I think this team has got to say, Nate Sampson, we need to get on your back and you need to carry us for a little while here and get us going. And he's the kind of veteran guy that you depend on to do that. I think, and, you know, the question is, I guess, if he can pull that out of here, Kevin.
Yeah, I think that's going to be key. And I think so, although it's unfair because Altman has had a couple, a decent season and a really good season, I think it's tough to expect Nate Sampson to come in and duplicate those numbers. I do think that Sampson will need to be a catalyst for this offense at some point if the Salt Dogs are going to make a move.
We drop to the last team of the division, the Sioux Falls Canaries, off to a bit of a tough start here at 3-7. They are in last place in the division. They are taking on the Sioux City Explorers, as you and I are talking here tonight, winning 4-3 going into the bottom of the 8th inning. Take 2 out of 3 against Lincoln. Things were looking a little bit better after a tough start against Cleburne, but went to Kansas City and just watched that pitching staff get battered, with the exception of a 5-3 loss on Saturday, lost 18-6 on Friday, 11-3 yesterday. Pitching is always a concern, but you usually didn't see that as much on the road. I think that's the concern I have about the staff, that you got beaten up really badly in Kansas City.
There's not the Birdcage alibi, though. Frankly, I think Legends Field is a pillbox. So, you know, you don't have the steady breeze blowing out like you do at the Birdcage, but I just think that ballpark, especially down the line, so left and right, plays pretty small, and there seems to be some fly balls at Manchester League, the park there, that you just don't think were hit all that well. But besides that, your pitching staff's just not getting the job done right now. They're not bearing down and making the right pitches at the right times. And in a league like this that is top heavy and batting, you just can't go through a season like that. You just got to wonder where the pitching will come from at some point, because you can't go on. I believe their team ERA is above 10 right now, and that's not a sustainable number if you're going to be a contender. So I don't know where you go from here. Do you try to get some guys that are fresh out of college and, you know, once they have the MLB draft, they might get skipped over, or guys that you know aren't considered as prospects for the MLB draft that you think are Division II, Division III guys that could come in and be sneaky good? I don't know where you find the pitching right now. And guys that Mike Meyer were expecting to be good key parts of his rotations, like Neil Lang and Ty Culbreth, just aren't getting the job done.
Because there is a bright spot, and there is, that you're looking at this club. They re-sign Ozzy Martinez, comes in 5 games of the season. He's looked fantastic for them. Mike Hart off to a great start for this club, up at 382 through the first 10 games. Darnell Sweeney looks like that was a huge pickup for the team. He's been very good for them. And I think you're looking at Jabari Henry is hitting okay, 286, Hunter Clannon at 268, Wyatt Ulrich at 267. You haven't seen the big numbers out of them yet, and you're still getting some pretty solid offense. I feel like the offense could eventually provide some opportunity for them to get some victories out of here. But like you said, Kevin, this pitching staff has been absolutely terrible at this point. And, you know, I think we were surprised to see a Jim Bennett that lost a job here. And you've got to wonder if Mike Meyer all of a sudden finds himself on the hot seat at this point.
You have to wonder. And the momentum right now in Sioux Falls seems to be carrying towards a new downtown ballpark for this ball club. And I know Mike Meyer would love to be part of that, but if this is a team that's going to win 30 to 40 games this year, you know, you have to do something to stay relevant in the Sioux Falls sports market. And a bad season this season is going to be 3 years in a row that there's been subpar baseball played at the Birdcage. And I love Mike Meyer, but I hope he can find something to turn this ball club around, or else the Canaries could be looking in another direction, as I believe you've alluded to several times. They like Mike a lot, but at what point do you have to make that difficult call?
And the week doesn't get any easier for them. You know, they have Sioux City coming to town here, and that's, again, the hottest team in baseball. They are winning here tonight, so I'm looking to kind of snap that Explorer string. And then you travel on to Winnipeg, a team who's traditionally been very good at home and played very well this last weekend at home. So then you wind up going on to Fargo after that. So this is a very tough stretch for this club, and it's going to take somebody stepping up in that pitching staff. Like you said, Kevin, is that there's, I don't want to come across as really critical on this, Kevin, but I look at some of these numbers and guys that are produced at this point, and I'm thinking to myself, a guy like Ty Culbreth, who knows exactly how to pitch in the American Association, you look at those numbers and you're just kind of shaking your head like, that's not Ty Culbreth. Ty Culbreth doesn't pitch like that. I mean, this guy's a veteran who gets it. And I guess some of those things really just kind of shocking me right now.
And sometimes pitchers, too, sometimes with these guys, too, it takes them like 3 or 4 starts to really feel like they're in form and ready to go. It's not like they get a full-fledged spring training in this league where they can get their get built up to be able to go five or six strong innings. So it's it can be tough for pitchers this time of year to really get into a groove. So for the sake of the Canaries, I hope that's going to be the case where these guys will be fine once they get some more starts in them.
Well, let's jump around the other partner leagues out there. Peter Zimmerman, named by the Frontier League as the player of the week. The Gateway Grizzlies player had seven runs scored. He hit homered four times in the during the week with 11 RBI. The pitcher of the week from the Windy City Thunderbirds was Henry Omana, who went the distance in his one start of the week, tossing a shutout, striking out nine. I'm pretty impressive that tossing a shutout, a complete game shutout this early part of the season. So congratulations to him out there. Also, I did not know this, so I learned a little bit out here, is that Hinch Life Stadium, where the New Jersey Jackals play, had a $100 million renovation this past offseason. I mean, that's like a new ballpark, isn't it? $100 million. So that big home run series they had this weekend with 10 homers hit in the series against Sussex County for the first time playing at their new ballpark, or refurbished ballpark, I guess I should say, out there.
I read up on that, and I believe it's Hinchcliffe Stadium. I could be wrong on that. But it's they refurbished it. It used to be a Negro Leagues field.
Oh, nice.
So that's a nice tie into that. I always, you know, when I found out that they're going to refurbish the stadium and use it for baseball, I thought, wow, wouldn't that be a neat thing to have the Kansas City Monarchs go to New Jersey and play a couple games at an old Negro Leagues stadium? But I guess when you're, I guess you'd rather play gimmick games against the Bananas instead. But anyways, it sounds like the ballpark is going to play small there because where the ballpark is situated, it's pretty flat, and there's not a lot of areas that are blocking the wind. So it sounds like it's going to be a breezy ballpark, and it sounds like it's going to be playing pretty well for the batters.
Cam Barnum homered twice there, it says, this past weekend. And you are right, it is Hinchcliffe. They had a typo in their article about this out there. So that's fantastic. Good for them out there doing that kind of renovation. Frontier League, Kevin, Evansville leading right now out in the West at 7-2. Very, very tough division early on here, as three teams are 6-3 right behind that, and then Joliet at 5-4 early on. So looks like that's going to be a battle. Sussex County leading the East at 6-2, with the only other team above 500 right now, the New York Boulders, early on in the year. There was no major transactions that occurred among American Association players, with the exception of, we did want to mention, that Tillman Pugh was acquired from the Atlantic League's Lexington Counter Clocks. I still don't get that name, but okay. Going to Sussex County, and man, Pugh was, I think, a rail cat in 16, 17, and 19, if I remember correctly, and so a little blast from the past for us there, Kevin. How about that?
Yeah, that name does ring a bell with me.
In the Atlantic League, right now the Long Island Ducks are leading the North Division at 13-8. They're tied with Southern Maryland, I should say, at 13-8. And the High Point Rockers out to a 16-6 start, with Gastonia behind them at 15-6. And the rest of that division really struggling early on. There is a lot of very successful former American Association players out in the Atlantic League. J.C. Ascara, who was catching last year for Kansas City, out already to a .357 batting average. Alex Crosby, a little bit of a blast from the past with the Gary South Shore Railcats, off to a .354 batting average. And I know that there's this discussion every year, Kevin, about which is the best partner league. And Alex Crosby was a fine player. You know, I mean, he hit above 300 a lot of years with Gary. Didn't put up big power numbers necessarily for them. I think the most he had was in a season was six. J.C. Ascara had big power numbers last year. I think he finished with 15 or 16 home runs, but didn't have a big batting average for the team. But Crosby had like 13 homers in the Atlantic League a couple years ago and is killing it right now with a 350 batting average. And I thought maybe this Atlantic League isn't the, you know, the step above that everybody seems to think. Am I being a little overly judgmental here with those kind of numbers?
Well, I think maybe you want to give Crosby a little bit of credit too. You know, maybe he's bulked up a bit and changed his swing. That's made it more conducive to being a power hitter too.
See, that's why I have Kevin around to always bring out the logic of things there. Make sure I'm on the right track. So, very good point. I think that covers all that's going on there around the partner league baseballs that we care about, baseball leagues that we care about. I think we covered everything, player of the week, where everybody's at in the standings. Where are we at? We're 9 more days left in this month, and a lot of exciting series coming up here. As Kevin and I are talking here tonight, I'm going to give the finals on there. They're in right now. Top of the ninth, Sioux Falls leading Sioux City 4-3, and Kansas City looking like they're about to win their 4th straight game as they are dominating Milwaukee 5-1. Tomorrow's series, Kevin, Lincoln is hosting Fargo, Winnipeg and King County, Gary traveling to Lake Country, Chicago traveling to Cleburne. That's an exciting week. I'm looking forward to that series, I got to tell you.
Yeah, it should be a doozy, and I think we'll know a lot more about Chicago after they go up against the Cleburne juggernaut.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting to see what that team is able to provide offensively. Well, Kevin, that takes us through everything that's gone out there, so we get to the best part of the show, the Kevin Loco final thought.
Well, you let me have it. I was waiting for you to mention it, You never did. Middle of the week last week, the American Association announced that, as had been rumored by several people, that Milwaukee will be hosting the American Association All-Star Game on July 18th. It'll be, just like last year, there'll be a home run derby on the 17th, and I'm just kind of reading off the press release here. On the Monday, there'll be a beer festival, golf outing at Lux Golf Bays, live music, and a variety of kids' activities around the Ballpark Commons campus. Festivities
sounds
also
like
include craft beer and soda sampling from over 15 breweries, a par 3 golf tournament at Lux Golf Bays, special guests with autograph and photo ops, and much more. And they say it's not to mention specials at the Umbrella Bar. You know, you guys know, favorite place of mine. Hinterhof, Lux Golf Bays, Blend Coffee and Cocktails, Brick Pizzeria and Restaurante, Doghouse, and more. Well, guys, I'm going to throw this one out here. If you read our This Week in the Association page, you already know. There is a historic bowling alley in Milwaukee at the Howler House. This bowling alley is the oldest sanctioned bowling alley in the United States. It has 2 lanes. It's in the basement of the bar. And what I would like to do, and it looks like on our This Week in the Association page, we may have a few bites already. I want to get a group of us, probably on the morning of the actual All-Star game itself, because there's not anything going on that I know of. I'd love to get a group of us to go out bowling on that morning, have a little mini tournament at the Howler House on the 2 lanes. So if anyone's interested in that, get a hold of Rob or I, or comment on our This Week in the Association Facebook page, because love to have, like, you know, a nice little group of us go do some bowling on a Tuesday morning at one of the most historic bowling alleys in America. If you haven't seen the place features is not the automatic pin setters like you have in bowling today. There are actual people behind the lanes setting the pins up. The ball return consists of the guy setting the pins, pushing the ball back down to return all the way back to the front of the lanes. So if anyone's interested, please let me know. I can make reservations, and I just think it would be a nice little addition to everything else going on with the All-Star game.
I think that is a fantastic idea. I like that a lot. Absolutely. And we're going to see Kevin bowl like a 260.
Well, I did that. I did a 275 on Saturday night. Granted, it was no tap, which means if you get 9 pins on the first ball, it's a strike. But still, I did manage to do that. Can't promise that at the Howler House. It's the middle of summer. I'll be lucky if I get a 150. But I just think it would be a blast to join other American Association fans and bowl at this classic bowling alley. That's a big part of what Milwaukee has to offer.
I think so, too. I think that'd be a great idea. And I think I should mention, too, because of the size of the Milwaukee press box, it will likely that Kevin and I will continue what we did last year and actually sit out on the crowd and find two empty seats out somewhere. And so if you see us out there in the crowd and want to come over and chat with us during the game, we'd love to hear from you. So come out and tell us how much you enjoy the show or how stupid you think we are, whatever. We'll listen to either one.
And we also like chocolate milkshakes. So, subtle hint.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We always love that. Well, Kevin and I want to thank Zach Narrier for joining us this week, taking a little time from his fiance on his day off. And we hope that he continues on with success. So for Kevin Luco, I'm Rob Pannier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.